First, to how the stories from Syria are being heard if you are a Russian citizen. You might have heard the UN Special Envoy, Stefan de Mistura, who's been so, put so much effort in over so long, saying quite passionately that he was willing to go personally to eastern Aleppo to escort, to put his body on the line, up to 1,000 Islamist fighters out of the city if it would mean a halt to the bombardment by Russian and Syrian forces. And you must have heard on the news and AM just now, the Secretary of State in America, John Kerry, condemning the attacks on civilians and hospitals, continuing that passion that we heard last week and saying that this amounted to war crimes. But does Russia care about this? What are its goals? To get some insight into the terrible power struggles behind this human tragedy, I'd like to welcome Stephen Fortescue to Saturday Extra. Stephen's an honorary associate professor at the University of New South Wales and the ANU. And we understand probably no one is better placed in Australia to guide us through the Russian perspective. Aware always, of course, that there'll be public stances and private reflections, and we'll try to discern whether they're the same things. He's lived in Russia during the Soviet era. He continues to visit and deeply understands the national psyche and workings of its government. Stephen, welcome to Saturday Extra.
Thank you.
Those comments from de Mistura, who's been so tireless, and Kerry, in seeking a diplomatic solution, they sound so desperate, to be honest. Russia's been called out on this, but it doesn't seem to be having any effect, although I do hear the Russians are saying they're willing to talk about possibly some form of new diplomatic solution. What's your feeling? Is it having any effect there, the way it's having in the West, this level of discussion?
Yeah, look, I'm at a slight disadvantage. I heard how you introduced me. Of course, I haven't been to Russia since 2014.
No, but everybody tells us that you understand it more than virtually anyone else who's allowed to talk to us, truly.
No, I mean, it is true. I'd like to think that's true. But to understand what's really going on in Russia in terms of the relationship between the power in Russia and the people, you have to watch Russian TV, and I'm not watching Russian TV at the moment. But my sense is that Russian TV is pretty well controlled, and so Putin doesn't have to worry about the effect on the local population of what we see as his barbaric behaviour being presented to their eyes, because it's not being presented to their eyes. Now, having said that, there are constraints on Putin's behaviour in terms of the domestic situation. There are economic constraints. There are probably, let's say, popular constraints. I've always had this view that the Russian people are essentially pacifist. I have to say it's been shaken a little bit in recent times, not just because of Syria, but the events in Ukraine and Crimea as well. But these are people who went through terrible times in the Second World War. Those terrible times are constantly kept in their mind because it's a very, very big part, the Second World War, of the Russians' view of itself. And also, I think, throughout the Soviet period, they were subjected to a lot of peace propaganda, that we are peaceful people, it's the other side that's always causing the problems. And I always felt that that had a big effect on the Russian people. You know, I can remember being in Russia during the Georgian events, and everybody saying, oh, no, but we don't want a war, we don't want a war, we don't want a war. Now, whether that's still the case, I'm not so sure, because there's generational change, and if anything, the younger people seem to be more bellicose than older people. But nevertheless, he can't get himself involved in a conflict that's going to cost a huge amount of money, because he's got an economic problem. But also, I don't think that he'll feel very safe about a conflict that's going to cause a lot of casualties. Mm. We saw that in the case of Ukraine, that when he was forced to commit regular Russian troops to East Ukraine. Obviously, he was trying to keep the casualties quiet, because you can't have casualties when you're denying that there are any troops there. But it was a bit more than that. He didn't want to have Russian people knowing that Russian people were being killed. Now, in Syria, I'm not an expert on Syria. I'd like to think I am an expert on Russia, but I'm not an expert on Syria. But you get the impression that it is a situation where he doesn't have to, certainly at the moment, commit even lots of economic resources, much less Russian troops. So in that situation, he doesn't have any great pressure on him.
So why is he doing it?
Well, he's doing it. You know, there are a lot of reasons why. I presume you're asking me why he's involved in Syria, not why he's being particularly barbaric.
No. Well, it's just that I just can't. I just assumed that he would take the first real opportunity that gave Assad a seat at the table, that got him out, that gave him cred, all of that, you know. He'd take it, and he's not.
Well, at the moment, as I said, the costs for him to stay there are not particularly high. So why would he leave? Now, that, of course, asks the question, what does he want from it? I mean, there's different versions of what he wants, and they're all a little bit overlapping. I mean, a narrow one that he wants to really deal with Islamic jihadists because of the threat to his domestic security if he doesn't. He's said that he's got thoroughly sick of what he sees as the Western penchant for regime change, and so he wants to support right to the bitter end until Assad has complete control in order to prevent this West feeling that they can just overthrow people whenever they want to. It's said that he wants to keep the mind of the local population off domestic problems by having foreign adventures. Now, I've already suggested that there's some constraints there. But I think the broadest and, in a way, the most vaguest but most simple and perhaps convincing explanation is that he simply wants Russia to be recognised as a great power. And a great power means one thing, that you have the right to identify interests in different parts of the world, that you intervene there, and that you keep intervening until you get what you want, which is a stable, Assad-dominated regime in Syria. I mean, he might be prepared to agree with a replacement for Assad, we don't really know, but essentially that regime would remain in place without any threat to its security. Thing, that he has military bases there on the Mediterranean, and the more secure those military bases are, the better as far as he's concerned.
Yes, I suppose it's the fact that Kerry, and I just don't know whether, I presume Kerry speaking directly to people like Sergei Lavrov, the foreign minister, Russian foreign minister, I don't know whether they're getting through to Russia TV, but it seems to me that Kerry and de Mistura are saying, do Russian people not care about civilian casualties anymore? This is a convention in particular that's come up from World War II, that civilian casualties just must be minimised. This is something that becomes a sort of hallmark of the world, almost like anti-slavery. Is that changing in Russia? Has it ever been there to the same extent in Russia?
Well, I guess if you're talking about the Russian people, they don't know.
You really believe that? You don't think they'd be aware? I mean, you've mentioned that, but you don't even think it's trickling through?
Well, you know, obviously, I said you have to watch Russian TV. That's not entirely true. There is the internet where people can learn just about anything. Now, I don't want to put myself into the mind of the Russian people. I know you've sort of presented me as if I can, but that's not entirely true. Nevertheless, what I would say is that the Russian people, they're patriotic people. They're subject to propaganda. So they want to believe that their country is doing the right thing and is on the right side. If they feel slightly uncomfortable about some of the things they hear and that they see, they can say to themselves, well, we're not the only people that do that. Lots of other people do that. And lots of other people have been doing that for a long time. So, like people in any part of the world, they can come to terms with what they're seeing if that's what they want to believe. If they want to believe that Russia is behaving as a great power and has legitimate interests, they will believe what they see. What they see is that, you know, not much is going on in terms of what the Russians are doing, and lots of other people are doing bad things as well. So I don't think it's a particularly extraordinary reaction that we might see if we can present the Russian reaction in that way. I'm talking about here the Russian people, not the Russian elite.
Yes, yes.
The Russian people. I don't think that we're talking about some sort of uniquely strange people. I don't think there's anything terribly unusual about that reaction. If there is something...
Just barrel bombs on hospitals really are pretty hard to take, you know?
I think if they were told that story, they'd just say it's not true.
Right.
The people who are that way inclined, I mean, I know people in Russia who would entirely believe it, but they are, I think it's pretty true to say, in a minority. The rest of the people, if they were given that information, they would not believe it. I think it's as simple as that. If there is something, particularly from an Australian perspective, that is a bit unusual about the Russians. Now, look, I'm a rigorous academic social scientist, and I'm always a little bit nervous about national stereotypes and things. But if there is something unusual about the Russians, particularly from, say, an Australian point of view, it is the great power complex. You know, they are absolutely convinced, when I say they, and it's a very big word, but they are absolutely convinced that Russia is, should be, has the right to be a great power and to be recognised and treated by the rest of the world as such. Now, I don't know if this is being, exaggerating or a bit too cynical, but, you have to, break eggs to make omelettes. Great powers do nasty things sometimes.
Oleg Kashin, who's one of Russia's most prominent journalists, argued in the Guardian that it actually is about Ukraine, that it is Putin's support. Putin is desperate to get... He didn't expect the Western response to Ukraine that he got. The sanctions there, he's desperate to get them lifted. He will do anything, in effect, to get himself treated differently. Do you think... what's your take on that?
I'd agree with Ukraine, and what the Russians call the near abroad is probably, for this whole thing, perhaps more important than Syria. I don't know that I agree. I think it's true that, as Oleg Kashin said, that he was probably taken aback and surprised by the Western reaction to Crimea and the Donbass. Okay. I don't know that it's... I don't know that I'd agree that he's desperate to have sanctions lifted.
All right.
There's a huge debate going on among specialists at the moment about what the effect of sanctions are, how bad an effect they're having on the Russian economy. My feeling is that, oil prices are far more important to the Russian economy than sanctions.
All right, Stephen. I'm afraid I shall leave you there speculating, but thank you very much indeed with all your lovely qualifications.
Not a problem.
Giving us an insight there. Stephen Fortescue, Honorary Associate Professor at the UNSW School of Social Science and Visiting Fellow at the ANU Centre for European Studies.